on 1116 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
7 past 9. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. The Ultimate Wrap here at 11:16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy. We'll bring you up to date with everything that's happened in the world of sport in the last 24 hours or so, and that way you can move into your Sunday knowing that you are up to date. George Danikian,
good morning.
Thank you for filling in for me last week.
Appreciate it. Pleasure. No worries at all. And more importantly, can I just start? I'm still thawing out from spending the day at St. Kevin's College.
What were you doing out there?
I went there to see the old boys play.
Oh, yeah.
A real eye-opener. A fantastic reception.
Footy or football?
And the real game, mate. The round ball code. Thank you very much. Yeah. It's football.
Ball. That's
you
right.
Got it? Yeah. And it wasn't a great day on the field for the old boys. St. Kevin's lost to Old Xavier 2-0. It's not good when you lose at home.
Not to Old Xavier.
And their reserves, I thought they might come back, but they couldn't make it. So Old Xavier 2 beat St. Kevin's Old Boys 1. But to all those who turned out to support the boys, well done, brother. Fantastic facilities.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, one day I might turn up and they won't have the rugby union markings on the soccer pitch. It'll allow the boys to see exactly where they need to pass the ball.
It's a private school in Melbourne, so chances are you're only going to have one rectangular field.
You'd think so.
So you share it.
Well, they do share it. They actually have got a brand new facility, but they didn't use it last night. They used the one that is part of the grounds. It's quite wonderful. It's like that other group along the road there, Scotch College. They have some facilities too. But something I discovered.
Yes.
St. Kevin's College, my brother-in-law, Simon Gillett, was the rowing coach back in 87, 88, when he took them to number 2 in the head of the river.
Oh, he'd have a boat named after him for sure, then, wouldn't he?
He has. And you know who launched it? You're gonna die.
Who?
My wife Di.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. She didn't.
She tells me champagne over it?
No, she still remembers the day because she couldn't break the bottle. Anyway, we're too indulgent. We've got a big hour of
results.
Yeah, we
have heaps, and we'll get straight into it.
Where do you want to start?
Well, we'll start with footy, as we always do. Brett Anderson.
You've got the inside into yourself,
Inside
have you?
Footy joins us. G'day, Bretto.
Hello, boys. Good to be with you.
Mate. Good to have you with us. Let's kick off with what happened last night and a couple of
cracking games.
Big games last night. The Demons, gee whiz, you know what? People will see that as a disappointing loss for Melbourne against a very powerful Adelaide, but the fact that they had 7 of their stars out, 5 of their best midfielders out, I thought it was a nice game from a young Demons team.
It was an interesting one, I guess, Shebex. They had a sort of describe the game because they got blown out of the water a little bit early by Adelaide, who are one of the better starters in the competition, and it's probably an area that Melbourne need to improve. Their first quarters this year have been pretty poor overall. I think they're something like minus 100 now on the differential across the first 16 weeks. So they're starting games very slowly, but they're finishing stronger. Just in the end yesterday, they were beaten by a better team on the day, and it was probably their defensive transition that really let them down. The amount of open goals and open space that Adelaide had to work in last night was a real issue because they actually got a fair bit of the footy early on inside 50. I think they were leading the inside 50 count at quarter time, yet trailed by 37 points on the scoreboard. So the inside 50s were really shallow. They were low percentage and it opened up a very quick transition to the other end. And the Crows were very, very good when the ball was inside 50 and inside their front half with a bit of space.
Taylor Walker, fantastic for the Crows up forward. Really
four
set it
ones.
Up, four big ones, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Look, and that's probably the thing. There's some young Melbourne defenders there that are still learning the role. And Taylor was a bit too smart, and his movement was really strong last night. I guess a few weeks ago, everyone was questioning where he was at form-wise. He was just sort of going along, but his last couple of weeks have been outstanding. And again, last night he was really good, along with Tom Lynch, who returned from illness as well, played a bit on a wing, played a bit across half forward. I think he ended up with 27 touches and a couple of goals. He was outstanding as well.
So what you're saying, Brett, is that Melbourne have basically played him into form.
Yeah, they might have a little bit last night. But I think there's a few positives to take out of it from a Melbourne point of view. Jesse Hogan, he had one of those nilly nights where he dropped a couple of marks. He's probably a bit stiff a few times with a few decisions that could have gone his way. But he did start to find the footy a little bit more. He missed a couple of easy shots, though, so he needs to clean that up a little bit. But look, overall, I think when you look at the two teams, one nearly got their best 22 out there and the other one was missing quite a few players. Yeah. It was the result we expected, but I don't think it's a case of throwing the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to Melbourne. They're right in the mix there with the Bombers, with the Saints, Tigers.
Yeah.
Port Adelaide in that sort of next tier, just below the very top.
Five to ten position.
Yeah, around there. Look, if they can sort of jag a couple more wins, they're certainly not out of the stretch to finish top four as well. Just like the Bombers or those teams I mentioned, it's pretty even, and I think we're going to see a pretty exciting final series.
Brett, all you've got to do is finish seventh, mate, and you can win the premiership.
Yeah, absolutely.
a couple of injuries out of that game last night for Dean Kent. That was pretty straightforward. He's got a dislocated shoulder. He'll miss a few games, but the real interesting one was Rory Sloane and his concussion. And his inability to know where the hell he was, to the extent that he just pushed trainers away and just wanted to keep on playing footy. And it took for a captain to come up to him and Taylor Walker to say, mate, just head over to the bench and just get yourself checked out, buddy.
Tough unit, Rory. He was in La La Land, though. He didn't know where he was, as you mentioned. And it was just an innocuous incident in the tackle. So not a swing tackle, not a Cam McCarthy-style drive. Sam Gilbert head into the ground tackle. It was just one where he got spun the wrong way when he was kicking the footy and unfortunately landed face first. So, he spent most of the second half off the ground and it probably didn't really hinder the Crows that much because he was being really well tagged again by Bernie Vince, who I think might have a few issues at the match review panel. At the tribunal.
An elbow to Eddie Betts for starters.
Yeah, I reckon that one he might have got away with, being insufficient force, but I think the high bump on, I think it was either Luke Brown or Brody Smith might come under, actually it might have even been Richie Douglas, might come under a fair bit of scrutiny.
It's an interesting one because he did look like he tried to pull out just at the last second, but it was too late.
I think he just got in a really awkward spot where the bounce of the ball put him in that unfortunate position where he really couldn't do too much other than what he did. But he turned the hip and collected him high and there was a bit of a push and shove after that. So look, the way that they're protecting the head as they should be, I'd say that he might be in a bit of strife.
I tell you what, I've never seen these numbers after crowd figure at Spotless Stadium. 21,924 supporters got along to see the local derby. That is great news for Aussie Rules footy in Sydney.
It is, and considering that there was 83,000 at ANZ Stadium for Arsenal and Western Sydney Wanderers, it's an amazing crowd.
What, for a demonstration game?
So
it just goes to show you it's a fantastic weekend.
And that's 105,000 people.
Yeah, and that's that whole precinct would have been buzzing, as you alluded to a little bit earlier, my boy. Yeah, fantastic.
So, a good crowd there and a good game of footy too between two very good sides. The thing with the Swans is whilst they did dominate the game, they always give you an opportunity. That's just the way that the game goes, especially against a good side like GWS, like the Giants, undermanned with so many players out. Jeremy Cameron, a late withdrawal before the game. But they still were there. They were thereabouts and at any time if the Swans dropped their guard, they were able to be close enough to strike. But in the end, the Swans win 8 of their last 9 games. They're now up to 5th. It's a remarkable resurgence after what we saw at the start of the season.
And Lance kicked some goals?
Lance was back to his absolute best. I think he kicked 4-4 last night. He was up and about. He was prancing and running around that forward half like he is the best player in the competition. And I think yesterday afternoon, I think Paddy Dangerfield put his hand up to say, hang on, buddy.
This is a
total fait accompli on that that discussion. But look, he's a champion of the game. And again, last night he was at his absolute best. But he had some mates there that really helped him along. And look, the Swans, you really got to take your hat off to them, don't you, Win, in terms of the way that they've been able to serve to come back from what was a horrible start to the year, because
I think a lot
of other clubs would have really dropped away.
No panic at all. They just softly.
No, exactly right.
The horse has turned himself into Kiwi, I think. Just 10 lengths last on the turn, and now he's just running down the outside and looking to win the Melbourne Cup.
Well, if they do win it, it'll be the second year of remarkable circumstances after the Bulldogs last year. So I think if they were to win it, a bit like this year where the Bulldogs winning last year, I think gave everyone hope that it can be done, no matter where you finish in the top 8 or who you are, if you're a team who's had a long premiership drought and considered to be a minnow of the competition, like a few, like Melbourne and St Kilda are to an extent because of their lack of recent success. But if you start 0-6 next year, you'll have us all sitting there thinking, well, hang on, Sydney did it last year, so why not them?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Gives everyone hope to be able to recover from poor starts.
Brett, you mentioned St Kilda. What happened?
They were shocking. George.
They were, weren't they?
In a very simple term, they were shocking.
I can't wait for the forensic post-mortem today from Adam Cooney and Mark Fine.
But on the flip side, the Bombers were very good. And that's what I think we've seen from not only St Kilda, but the Bombers, Melbourne, Richmond. Their best is very, very good and probably as good enough to win the Premiership. The problem is being able to bridge the gap between their best and their worst. And
consistency.
We saw that a bit with Essendon a few weeks ago against Brisbane. We've seen it in other performances as well. But you can't doubt that they've got the firepower there when they're on their game to do a lot of damage at the end of the year if they are to make the finals. And they're still certainly no certainties to make the finals, considering where their record sits and also how tight the ladder is. It's very competitive around that mark. But they were fantastic the other night. And I think the Joe Watson being rested was an interesting one going into the game. It probably suggested they wanted to get a bit more speed through midfield. And if they cut the Saints up, the Saints were unable to put that manic pressure on because Essendon's ball movement was too quick for them. And up forward, they had some blokes who were taking marks and kicking goals. And at ground level, they were really dangerous as well. So it was a bit of a complete performance from the Bombers. The Saints, yeah, really disappointing. But I think based on what we saw last week, we know what they're capable of. It's just a case of getting back to that consistent footy and making sure that the teams don't get head starts and big jumps on them, because after the last night, after Friday night, they really struggle once they control the Bombers start to control the game.
There's pretty much a certainty in this world at the moment. When you put the two teams together, Geelong and Hawthorn, as we have for the last 10 years, you know, bar maybe one or two games, that you're going to have an absolute cracker of a match. And yesterday afternoon at the MCG was no exception. And I think you said it right about 2 minutes ago. Patrick Dangerfield has just put his hand up to say, hey, there is no one better than me.
Oh, it's a big call, isn't it? This year, probably this year again. He's looking at winning back-to-back Brownlows, unless Dustin Martin can have another big game today. You would think it's down to those two, but I'll tell you what, there's a bloke at Hawthorn who's pushing really hard too. Tom Mitchell yesterday was outstanding, and I reckon if you start to look at how many votes he's starting to rack up just on the weight of possessions, he's really putting himself somewhere in the conversation if the other two boys don't poll as well as what we think on Brownlow night. But look, he was on one foot or one leg danger yesterday, goes to the goal square, kicks 5 goals, 6. A virtuoso performance not seen since the likes of Gary Ablett at the Cattery. Gary Ablett senior when he used to do feats like that. Look, he was remarkable yesterday. I think from watching him in under-18s at the Falcons, he used to play out of the goal square a bit. Nicky Turner would whack him down there and the coaching staff at the Falcons would put him out of the square, and just his ability to sort of charge out in the lead and his dynamic movement inside forward 50 was a real handful at under-18 level. And again, yesterday, we saw that again. So he can mark it over his head. He can get it at ground level. He's a really difficult matchup, even on one leg. And in the end, he was the difference between the two sides because the Hawks were fantastic.
Jeff Kennett will still not be getting too distressed, because he always reckons when it comes to the really big games that mean something, the Hawks have the capacity to beat the Cats.
Well, maybe not this year.
Probably not this year, but I'll tell you what, if you have a look at the record, when they have met in finals, it's pretty much held true. So how about Isaac Smith, though, guys? Shot after the siren last year in that qualifying final, I think it was, that could have put Hawthorn into a prelim. Obviously, they then went out in straight sets the next week. And last night, the circumstance re-happened again with
so Brett,
taking the shot.
Well, let's look at this. And this is the point that will be discussed, I think, most of all. Was he thinking at the time when he took that mark that I don't want to have a set shot based on what happened last year and play on? Or was it just an instinct thing just to grab that ball, knowing that there was a second or two left, and go for it?
I think it was an instinct thing, just watching it very quickly. I've probably only seen it once or twice, but it looked like it was an instinct thing. Like, he was obviously a little bit further out than what he was last year. Not too much, but still within distance. But I think it was just the way that they were playing, and the whole mindset at that stage was to try and come back, because Hodgie just kicked the goal on the right foot, and there was only 20-odd seconds to go up the centre bounce. So everything was rush, rush, rush. And that was just the mindset, was, oh, we've got to keep it moving. Look, if he had his time again, he might have gone back and had the shot, but it's remarkable how it happens again. The same player, the same sort of circumstance against the same team within a year, but the Cats survive again, and they move well. I think they moved to the top of the ladder with that win, but then the win of Adelaide moved them back on top. So they're in a very good position again, the Cats. The question for them is, can they do it at the finals? And because that's been the challenge for Chris Scott after that premiership in his first season. Just his finals record's been really poor. So that's going to be the big challenge.
Brett, what about the other Scott and his side, North Melbourne?
Yeah, well, they're not tracking that well at the moment. But
up and down.
Again, they're not the first team who's been blown away by Port Adelaide in the first quarter at Adelaide Oval. They're certainly not on their own there. Port's done that to many a better team than what North Melbourne are. But I think when you look at it, the margin blew out in the end, I think, to 70 points. But for long periods there, it was pretty tight for the rest of that game. It was just at the very end where Port sort of got a few extra goals. But after conceding what was a pretty big lead at quarter time, the Roos were pretty competitive for the next three and a bit quarters, or two and a bit quarters. So they stuck in the game. They found ways to generate scores. But as I said, at the end, the Power got a few late ones. And look, Sam Pelpepper's putting his pace forward for being in the rising star mix as well. I think we thought it was down to two or three players. But his last sort of month of form on top of what he's done all year has been really impressive. Two goals, 23 possessions yesterday. A few clearances as well. So he's right in the discussion. So we've got a few awards this year that I think we might have three or four contenders for, which is exciting.
It is exciting. And finally, mate, just as the players nail a coffin in Noel Buckley's coaching career,
oops,
then the next week they come out and think, oh, hang on, we'll rip that nail out and try again next week.
Yeah, I think it went into Rockets, unfortunately. That was the tough call of yesterday. Who was going to lose that game was probably going to be under a fair bit of pressure. And look, the Pies, again, a great start, I think they got five goals up in what was monsoonal conditions on the Gold Coast. But as Collingwood supporters will say, there's only one team who can hand over a five-goal lead in those conditions, and it is the Pies. And the Suns got right back into the game through some really good, hard footy, and they did it with two players down too. Stephen May was off the ground with a hamstring. Jared Lyons was off injured as well. So two really important players. But after getting that lead, I think they got two goals in front there. The Pies really came home strongly. It was almost like they found a new gear in the wet conditions in the final term. They started to use the ball really well. Taylor Adams probably used the ball the best he's done all year. He was a really influential performer. And up forward, Ben Reid and Darcy Moore took
some. Treloar was good too.
Yeah, Treloar was very good as well. So they had, in the end, if you look at it, they had probably their best side in for the year on paper, the Pies. And they've got the results, so maybe people could point at that and say, well, look, when Bucks gets his best team in, they do win games. I think their record with Daniel Wells is really good too. I think it's 1-8 without him, and it's certainly in the positive when he's playing. So,
well, that's why they went and got him.
It does help.
That's why they went and got him. Yeah,
absolutely. So, no, look, a good win for Collingwood probably doesn't mean that they can make the finals, or it probably doesn't open the door that much considering the teams ahead of them. But, look, it's a bit of affirmation going into the last sort of five or six games of the year, and if they can finish it off well, who knows what might happen with the coaching situation.
Exactly. Single word answers to these questions. Richmond v Brisbane.
Tigers.
Carlton v Wollaston Bulldogs.
Ooh.
I've gone Blues in this
one.
Yeah,
so have I.
They defend a bit better, and at the G, they defend really, really well.
And Fremantle West Coast.
West Coast. Right. They're not single word answers. I've given you a couple there, Shabester. But
no, you have. That's all right. I expected that.
Back in. If they don't win today, questions will start to get asked because Josh Kennedy's back in the side. They've got their best 22 effectively out there, outside of Nick Natanui. If they don't win, I think the blowtorch will be on the Eagles.
Always great to have you on board, mate. We'll do it again next week.
Cheers, boys. Have a good Sunday.
Thanks,
Brett Anderson, SEN's Inside Football. Scores from the VFL saw the following results. Williamstown account for Collingwood by 60 points. Sandringham beat Port Melbourne by 8 points. Richmond defeated Werribee by 102 points. And Essendon defeating Northern by 81 points. In the TAC Cup, Dandenong victors over Northern, Eastern Rangers over Gippsland, and Sandringham over Bendigo. And in the Women's VFL League, it was Darabin 74 to VU Western 25. We'll take a break at 25 minutes past 9. When we come back, we're talking tennis with Brett Phillips.